The game.
Here we go!
Hello and welcome to The Game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. Today we will chat with our friend Rex Hudler at 5:10 because got to celebrate the Royals. They keep on rolling. Unfortunately, it may have still been a net negative weekend, in my opinion. I'll explain that coming up here in the open. K-State basketball has a replacement very quickly for Isaiah Maurice. We will break that down for you as well today on the show, starting at 4:25. Can't be serious at 5:50 as always. And a lot in between. The Game KMAN on Twitter, as well as Facebook. If you want to communicate with us, you can also call the show 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350. Well, the Royals just keep on rolling. I already made fun of myself for doubting them as much as I did over the last couple of weeks and months once they hit that nine-game losing skid early in the year and seemed like they were out of it. They went 3-4 in Anaheim. They won 7-3 yesterday to get another victory, and now all of a sudden find themselves just two games out of a wild card spot and 3.5 games out of first place in the Central. First things first, before I rain all over everybody's parade like I typically do, let's give some props and some credit where credit is due to the Royals. They are winning in a really fun way right now by hitting a lot of home runs, hitting for power, and getting great pitching performances from Jason Vargas, who was not even as sharp as he has been most of the year, but just continues to put up numbers and now leads the majors in wins.
Yeah, it's something that you certainly did not see coming. I mean, the Royals, I heard this crazy stat, they had not had a road trip in which they had won seven games since 2013. So you're talking before winning back-to-back pennants. It's something that they had not been able to do. And they had an offense that was rolling for a lot of that, and again, they had the worst offense in franchise history in the first month of the season. So just more evidence that baseball is the most unpredictable sport there is. And now here they are sitting 2.5 back of Cleveland, even though they had a great weekend. They're 2.5 back and very much in the thick of things again, really for the first time all year, you could say.
Well, the part that has been the most fun for me is really what I mentioned, that they've done it this year in ways that I never expected they would be doing it. I mean, Vargas is leading the charge on the mound, which I would have never in a million years expected him to be the hot commodity that he is right now for teams in need of starting pitching heading into the trade deadline, and just such a rock in the rotation for a team that's desperately needed it with the injury to Danny Duffy, what happened to Yordano Ventura before the year, and maybe even more so than that, just the power that they are bringing to the table right now. I mean, they're on pace to just shatter the club record for home runs in a season. They're on pace for 195, which would be 33 more than their record, which was set all the way back in 1987. And to be honest, we're fans that even though we saw a World Series, championship, two World Series, couple pennants, we never have seen a team that hits for power. And there is a part of guys knocking it out of the ballpark all over the yard that is just fun. And we've been starved for it, and you're seeing a couple guys trending towards 30-plus homers in Moustakas and Salvador Perez. I take some pride and some pleasure in just seeing them winning like this, even as fun as it was to have That's What Speed Do and all that. It is cool to see them reinvent themselves.
There was a time just a few years ago where we thought that power was Billy Butler hitting 20 home runs in a season.
Right.
That was power to us. And now Mike Moustakas has 18 in the first, like, 38% of the season or something like that. So it's just, it's really crazy. And look at what Lorenzo Cain has done over the course of the last 2 weeks. I saw this stat, which was absolutely incredible. More than 11% of Lorenzo Cain's career home runs happened on this past road trip. That is absolutely out of this world.
That is.
Because he's got something like 52 home runs in his career, and he hit like 8 of them on the road trip or something like that. I don't know the exact numbers, but more than 11% of his career homers happened on this last road trip. So I don't know what the reasoning is for that. It's not like they weren't really playing at a bunch of hitters' parks or anything like that. They just are seeing the ball pretty well. And when you've got a rotation that is depleted like the Royals is, you're going to need that because you cannot count on Jason Vargas being this the entire year. You have got to get more out of Ian Kennedy down the stretch of the season. There's no doubt about that. And until those things start to happen or start to improve, you're going to need some power.
Are you with me, though, that this is almost made better, that they're winning in this new way that we have not been able to really see much of over the last few years?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm a sucker for the stolen bases and the situation where if you're in a tie game in the eighth inning or something like that and you get the leadoff man on, you know you're going to score because you're going to do the small ball thing. But it's nice. It's great for people who are fans of sitting in the outfield seats. They're getting more souvenirs this year than normal.
I guess I'm surprised that there's not more of that for you as there is for me. I mean, there's a reason why the steroid era happened, and baseball, in my lifetime, the most I can remember baseball being a real factor on the national sports scene, like people caring about it on a national level, more than just their local market team. That was like 1998 when they had the home run chase between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. Like, chicks dig the long ball. There's a reason that saying exists. People enjoy watching the homers and more offense. The team scoring 6 runs per game right now. I do think there's legitimately something to that that you want to be a part of, and you feel like you've been on the outside looking into that even when they've had their great run.
Go back to Moose for a second. He's lefty, right?
He is.
Okay, so he's definitely on pace to set the new Royals record for most home runs in a season by a lefty. John Maryberry set that record in 1975 with 34. So Moose is well on his way to crushing that record.
Well, we're not even worried about John Maryberry right now.
We're talking Steve Balboni, Mitch. Yeah. Get John Maryberry out of here.
Well, I mean, he's the righty record holder.
I mean, he's the record holder.
He's the record holder.
I mean, lefty, righty, whatever. I just want to see the ball out of the park.
That doesn't matter as much at Kauffman Stadium because the measurements are all the same. You know?
Like if you're playing at Yankee Stadium
right.
with a short porch in right field, then, yeah, that would be different as well. But then your home run leader would almost certainly be a left-handed guy there. We'll talk with Rex Hudler at 5:10 about all this. I want to ask him as well about what apparently has been the Royals' secret to success. It's going to surprise you. Read a really good article about it. The Kansas City Star will talk about it at 4:40. I think that will be entertaining. Plus, it's always good to just get a pep talk from him in general, especially when things are really rolling and going good. But here's the downside to the weekend. And if you would have told me the Royals were going to win 3 of 4 in Anaheim and be just 3.5 back in the division, be just 2 back in the wild card, I would have said there's no way that you could ever consider that to be a net negative weekend unless there's some catastrophic injury. But what's happened is Cleveland now has won 5 straight, and they just swept 4 from the Twins to go from 2 down to 2 up in the division. And it's not just the immediate implications of that, because we are still sitting here on June 19th. I realize that there's a lot of baseball left to be played. But more so than that, it's just that the Indians are starting to get hot. And that is what you fear, because we've always felt like, hey, wild card, all right, we can consider that if it gets there. But the thought was, well, the division's been so poor, you chase after the division. The Indians are the team that have the highest ceiling. I don't think there's any doubt about that in this division, and you don't want to see them get on the roll that they're on right now.
Yeah, it's and they're doing it in all ways. I mean, they're hitting for power. They're hitting for average. Their pitchers are really putting things together. They just look like a good team, and it's like we said from the beginning, the Royals getting to the playoffs this year is very dependent on the Indians not piecing everything together, because when they are at their best, they are the best team in this division by a significant margin.
They have the best starting pitching, which I think is a big part of the scare for me, because you think that that can carry them throughout the year. They certainly have what you would consider a better rotation on paper than the Kansas City Royals. Now, maybe if Danny Duffy gets back and really starts rolling, that would change some things there. But, yeah, it's dangerous to see them do that. Like, you want – the Minnesota Twins could go stay out in first place as long as possible, as long as they want to. They felt more to me like the 2003 Royals that – led the division at the All-Star break and then all of a sudden faded back because you knew it was somewhat of a mirage the whole time, as much as you wanted to believe.
You saw, or I mean, I think that you can make your case for that point by saying that the Twins, are one game over 500 and their run differential is minus 44.
Yeah, there you go.
That tells you everything.
There you go. Yes, I would agree with that. You'd rather be chasing the 2003 Royals than the defending American League champs who had a 3-1 lead in the World Series last year. There's another way to spin it as well. Again, we'll talk with Rex Hudler at 5:10. Royals key to success at 4:40. But when we come back, K-State has a replacement for Isaiah Maurice. How much will he help? We'll examine that next here on the game. Back here on the game, Rex Hudler with us at 5:10. Great job nailing that name, Mitch. I'm worried about the first time I'm going to have to say it. They certainly, I'll tell you this much, the K-State basketball recruiting class, I guess if you want to consider this transfer in the recruiting class as well, they have taken no consideration the radio guys that have to pronounce the name. Radio, TV, broadcasters. The broadcasters for K-State Athletics, anybody who's going to be doing the games, no consideration to us with the players that have been added.
Just start working on it. It's all about muscle memory. Motto Sala. Motto Sala. Motto Sala.
I'm still trying to get McCall Maween.
McCall Maween.
McCall Maween, Motto Sala.
You guys totally missed my joke, by the way, during that update. I said, when K-State needs a big man, better call Sala.
Oh,
I was not listening. But I really appreciate that.
Timely.
Fact.
The Better Call Saul season finales tonight.
Yes.
Good job, Mitch. You're on your A game today. That's what that tells me. All right. Motto Sala is the replacement for Isaiah Maurice. We found out Thursday afternoon, late afternoon, that Maurice was going to be off the team. So, the particulars on Sala, 6'9", 235 pounds, transfer from Mount St. Mary's. They won their conference and went to the NCAA tournament, lost to Villanova. He averaged 6 points, 5 rebounds per game and 20 minutes per game last year. Now, you were on top of this story. Do you have anything else to add just about the details here on Sala before we get into the conversation of how much he will actually help?
Well, K-State did have experience seeing him in person because Mount St. Mary's was a part of the first four. They played New Orleans up in Dayton.
Okay.
So they did have a chance to watch him in person, and this was a roster at Mount St. Mary's that was decimated by transfers over the course of this offseason. I believe this is their fifth guy that they're having leaving the program. He had originally, about a month ago, committed to go to UNC Wilmington, but when the opportunity at K-State came up, it did not take him very long at all for him to decide he wanted to come to Manhattan instead.
Thinking back to the Corey Sutton discussion and transfers and all that, mm-hmm. You want to start having that discussion. Mount St. Mary's is a great exhibit A for that, with all the guys that they're losing, with players trying to move on, one of which is going to Texas. That was their leading scorer from this past year. So in some ways, the farm system for the bigger schools is what this has turned into. Okay, if you're going to try and examine here what this will actually add to the K-State roster, he seems more like a defense and rebounding type of guy, even though I don't, you know, 5 rebounds per game in the RPI number 30 conference is not eye-popping. The one highlight I could find of him when I Googled it was from the NCAA tournament. He blocked a shot of a Villanova kid. So, I mean, has some athleticism, seemingly. But without knowing a ton about him, I will say I think I would listen to a case that you could feel like, based on what we know now, he may be as effective or perhaps a better fit than Isaiah Maurice if he is going to be a defense and rebounding guy. Because what you're missing more with losing Wesley Owundu and DJ Johnson, I would tell you, is rebounding more so than scoring. You're going to miss their scoring, but you feel like on the roster they have more scorers, obviously, than they do rebounders. You don't have anybody coming back this year that averaged more than 3 rebounds a game last year. So that's really what you need. So if you believe that that's what he is going to come in and do, I can listen to, hey, for next year's team, that may be better. I think, to me, there's no doubt that based on the skill set Isaiah Maurice had, his ultimate ceiling on down the road, if he developed for 4 years, higher. Because he's a guy that can score. Isaiah Maurice could fill it up if he could have stayed around and figured it out. So this goes back again to, you got to keep guys in the program, develop them. It's frustrating to have to start over here. But he does come in with 2 years of eligibility and might be the better fit for next year. I would listen to that argument.
I think that he probably is, not by a wide margin, and it's not anything that you're going to throw a parade over here. But at first, everyone said, oh, well, Mount St. Mary's, and he's only putting up those numbers. That means basically nothing. And there isn't a ton that you can take out of that, but you can look at the fact that he did play 7 games against NCAA tournament competition last year. 6 of them were against NCAA tournament teams that were an 8 seed or better. They did play a very good non-conference schedule, including 2 games against Big 12 teams. They played Iowa State, and they played West Virginia. Against Iowa State, he recorded 2 points and 14 rebounds against the Cyclones, which are not – that's not a team that –
It's a bizarre stat line.
I know. It's not a team that prioritizes rebounding, as we know, with Steve Prohm and how things are operated there. So it's not totally shocking, but it does tell you that he's an effort guy, probably going to do well on the play hard chart. And more than anything, they need a guy that can get 5 or 6 rebounds a game, and he may be able to do that for them.
I would have some concerns as far as how it translates when you're not dominating it at the lower level, because, again, I know you did tell me they played a good non-conference schedule. That's what you can read into there. They played a good non-con schedule, and they made the NCAA tournament. So they played a decent amount of pretty good teams. But it is different going through an 18-game Big 12 schedule when, even if you're not playing tournament teams, TCU, for instance, is going to be much better than, like, the 7th or 8th place team in the, what is it, the Northeast Conference?
Northeast Conference.
The Northeast Conference. So it takes more of a toll on you. Now, this guy is also a year older. He has some time to develop, get coaching here at K-State. I mean, there's a case to be made there. But typically, if you're going to get real excited about a guy, it would be somebody that is dominating at a lower level. And that's not what the case was here with Sala. So we'll see. I just remain skeptical because it's always such a crapshoot to know what you're getting when you're taking someone from so much of a lower level. I mean, it really is almost like AAA to the major leagues, especially when it's a conference this low. I can remember Justin Edwards, Stephen Hurt coming in. Even the conferences that they came from, at least last year, were higher up the RPI charts. So it's so much of a lower level that you are making the jump up to here at Big 12 play that it becomes tough for me to really know what a guy is going to do.
He does share two weaknesses with Isaiah Maurice. Number one, he is prone to foul trouble. He was playing most of his games between 15 and 20 minutes, something like that. And in those games, he was picking up, you know, at least 2 or 3 fouls all the time. So he needs to figure out how to control his body, control his arms a little bit more. He also last year was a 49% free throw shooter. So if you're going to have him be one of your more physical presences in the paint, that means he's probably going to go to the line quite a bit, and you're going to want him to do a better job there. But those were both things that were issues for Isaiah Maurice last year.
You know, and when you're bringing a guy up from a lower level, I mean, first of all, that those numbers are, I think, good to point out. The foul trouble bothers me much more than the free throw shooting. Like, you know how I feel about free throw shooting. Like, I hate when people complain about free throw shooting. It's just the most easy thing to – it's lazy. It's a lazy criticism after a game to just say, well, you know, shoot free throws better. Well, okay, whatever, man. And I hated during the Frank Martin era, a team that gets to the line a ton and misses free throws. Like, well, yeah, they're shooting a higher volume of free throws. Let's just chill out here, everybody. So anyway, there's my rant on free throw shooting for the day. But I still just we'll examine later on what exactly happened with Justin Edwards and Stephen Hurt, because they're the most comparable guys as far as where they came from when they transferred to K-State. That I think you can look into and realize that it's just so tough to decipher what exactly is going to happen here. But if you use my AAA to the major leagues analogy, I mean, some guys can tear it up, play really well, look good at the lower level. You bring them up to the big leagues, and they just can't ever figure it out. Kila Kaiahue, remember that guy? He was like the Royals' saving grace in the minors forever because he was just hitting the crap out of the ball in Omaha.
That was the first name that came to mind when I got wind of this story yesterday. Oh, he reminds me of Kila Kaiahue.
Well, I mean, I wasn't saying he reminds me of him. I'm just using that as an example of a guy who might not work out. Then, sometimes, there are guys that have performed pretty well in the lower levels, and they're Whit Merrifield, and they turn into actual legitimate guys that can hack it, and then sometimes, you know, they can be even better than that. So, there's just a lot of variance here, and I would just keep the I would just temper the expectations, is basically the way I look at this. I think it's clear that you're losing more in the long term if you're going to look at this as a trade, Maurice, for Mato Sala. You're losing more in the long term because Maurice was a guy that I think could have developed into a really nice player. But for next year, if things go right, this could be a better fit for next season, which really the way things are trending for Bruce Weber and the coaching staff would be almost more so ideal than Maurice. I mean, there's another case that you can make because right now they're more or less on a year-by-year thing here where they're going to have to continue to make the NCAA tournament to keep things going with this program. So that's, I think, where things sit. We will examine in hour two at 5:40 what Stephen Hurt and Justin Edwards did, both at their previous stops in lower leagues and then what they did when they came to K-State. Rex Hudler on the show at 5:10. When we come back, though, we will talk some Royals. Great article in the Kansas City Star about the bizarre key to the Royals' turnaround to get where they're at today. We'll tell you about it next here on The Game. We'll be joined by Rex Hudler at 5:10 today to get a Royals pep talk. They are really back in it after winning 3 of 4 this weekend. the key to their turnaround, I think, will surprise you here. First, though, I got to put, what is this? I've never heard this before, this music.
Shinsuke, it's a Japanese wrestler who's probably the most popular guy in wrestling right now.
What?
Yeah.
Who?
Shinsuke Nakamura. I know, in one ear, out the other, right over your head.
Yeah, names.
No clue.
Why, what is the deal with names?
That's
today?
His real name.
Man,
Mado Sala.
Mado Sala. What was that one? This one? This guy?
Yeah, Shinsuke Nakamura. He's Japanese.
Shinsuke, you're saying it so fast, I don't even... Can you pronounce it phonetically for me, please? Slowly?
Shinsuke Nakamura.
Shinsuke Nakamura. Okay, that's much easier. I can do that. Appreciate it. 537-1350, 866-776-1350. The Game KMAN on Twitter as well. You have no idea what I'm talking about here with the key to the Royals' success, huh? You didn't read that?
I didn't.
Read that piece?
But I'm not much of a coffee guy, so I'm not sure I'm buying into it.
So you do know. Well, I've got the proof, my friend. According to the Kansas City Star and many Royals players, the key to the turnaround has been an espresso machine that was purchased by Peter Moylan, who is a reliever for the Royals. It was a $600 espresso machine. Must be nice to be able to drop $600, get your coffee fix on. I would love that. But it's not just the espresso. He makes his own drink called the Sleggiato. The Sleggiato is espresso blended with chocolate milk and served on ice. And that's been what he has been dishing out to everybody. And has been helping the Royals turn things around. It came about around a month ago, I believe, is the timing when this really got rolling. And there's not only the example of what the Royals have done on the field as a team, but multiple individual stories that I can give you here to back this up. Telling you, this is a real thing.
Okay.
Whit Merrifield had his first Sleggiato on May 13th. May 13th was the day he started his 19-game hit streak. Okay?
Okay.
All right. You with me there?
Okay.
Lorenzo Cain was one of the last guys to give in and start using Sleggiatos because he deviated from his normal pregame routine of Red Bull. He went with a Sleggiato last Wednesday in San Francisco because he apparently really doesn't like day games, which was interesting to me. If I were a baseball player, I think I would like day games better. You could have the night to just chill. But he doesn't like day games, so he wanted to pick me up. Had a Sleggiato. You remember what he did Wednesday?
Was that his two-homer day?
Well, he went 3-for-4 with a homer.
Okay.
So, Sleggiato, correlation working there once again. And then Alex Gordon had to wait a day after his first Sleggiato to see the results. But Alex Gordon has had his first homer the day after he had his first Sleggiato. And he has become so hooked that he bought a second espresso machine to take on the road with them because Peter Moylan just keeps this one at the Royals clubhouse at home. So, in the face of all that evidence, please, sir, tell me that this is not the reason that the Royals have gotten back into the race.
So what you're saying is a $600 piece of junk Starbucks knockoff is taking over the rightful place and the rightful throne of the 2016 Rally Mantis?
Yeah, this is way better than a Rally. I mean, this is like the Rally Mantis, Trap Queen, whatever you really want here.
Rest in peace, Rally Mantis and Rally Mantis Jr.
Yeah, see, I think this is way cooler than a Rally Mantis. It's a bug. Like
it's not just
a
bug. It's a magical bug that was established, and it didn't handle air travel very well, which is ironic because they can fly.
Yeah,
but
you know what would handle air travel really well? An espresso machine.
I doubt it. Can you get that through TSA? Pretty sure they're confiscating that.
Well, they have been because Alex Gordon takes one on the road.
I think that he's having it driven from city to city.
I don't know, man. I'm telling you.
I'm not big on this theory.
Here's the thing. With the Rally Mantis, you're having to believe in some kind of higher power, some kind of higher mantis power that exists that's actually making things happen, like angels in the outfield, except this time instead of an angel, it's a mantis just flying in the outfield, knocking balls into people's gloves and whatnot. Or you could just believe that it's legitimate substance here in caffeine that'll help you out, a nice tasty caffeine boost that everybody can stomach, because some of these guys were not real coffee drinkers before, but when Moylan mixes it up with the chocolate milk, it becomes palatable enough for basically everybody, and then all of a sudden they're getting this extra boost.
Chocolate milk's bad for you.
This is tangible. The Rally Mantis is not tangible.
Well, calories are also tangible, but they're not good for you.
I think these guys work out enough and move around enough that a little chocolate milk isn't going to hurt them like it might hurt the rest of us mere mortals here. Alex Gordon's still pretty jacked, and he's drinking the Sleggiatos.
And he's batting like 230 now instead of like 160, but eh.
Well, we know it's a democracy here. Mitch is going to be the deciding vote. Would you opt for the tangible espresso machine and Sleggiatos or the intangible Rally Mantis is the better, what would you call it, like rallying aid? Better good luck charm? Which one are you taking?
I'm going to take the espresso machine because sooner or later that bug is going to die.
See?
So is the machine.
Yeah, but it's got a longer shelf life, let's say.
Because I'm pretty sure that like espresso machines that you buy for your home, like every 3 or 4 months, you got to order a new part for it or something like that. Like the upkeep is way worse than the payoff of having fresh espresso in the morning. I mean that's how I interpret it, but maybe I need to do more research.
I would kill for an espresso maker, whether it's going to break or not. I think it would be great. And a $600 espresso machine is probably going to work pretty well. And here's the other part. Half the article was about Peter Moylan, who's from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So Australia is, I guess, like one of the coffee capitals of the world, especially the city that he's from. It's like a port city. So they have really, really good coffee. And he says any coffee, espresso, whatever that you get here just does not compare. This is as close as he can get. So the fact that you called his espresso machine a Starbucks knockoff would really upset Peter Moylan.
I think I found the exact one that he got. I'm checking it out right now on bedbathandbeyond.com.
Great. Great. I'm glad that
it's lighter than I thought.
Started to buy it here. But it was actually very interesting. Peter Moylan doesn't even like Starbucks because he says they do it wrong. The espresso is not made correctly. So he took matters into his own hands. That's another aspect of this. The Mantis just showed up. This has actually been force-fed by somebody. It has taken effort to cultivate the Rally Espresso machine, and Peter Moylan should get some credit for that, and therefore I think that wins.
What's the point of espresso or coffee or caffeine? It's supposed to wake you up, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to give you more energy, make you more aware. I mean, I get these games aren't played in the morning, but what did the Royals need to do badly? That was to wake up, perform better.
Yes. Yes, I think that puts the final nail in the coffin, man. We're gonna have to break on that. I think that was the perfect punctuation mark to.
You said that
machine being better than the Rally Mantis.
You said Peter Moylan says that Starbucks doesn't do it right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Peter Moylan should start pitching right. He's got an ERA of 6.65 so far this season.
Who cares about that? As long as he's getting everybody else going. Would you rather have Peter Moylan pitching well or Lorenzo Cain hitting homers and Whit Merrifield hitting in 19 straight games? I'll take the latter. Rex Hudler is going to be on with us at 5:10. Let's see what he thinks about this espresso business. As we close the hour here, something we talked about last week went from bad to much, much, much worse this weekend. You're listening to The Game. Mitch, 1 for 2 now, man. How many times did we say the name during that first segment?
You guys got in my head. I know how to say it, I just, typical Mitch, slip up on a word.
And see, here's where it gets dangerous, because some of the time you have to fill in and do PA for men, don't you? Haven't you done that before?
My name's on the list, but I've never done it.
Okay, well, you gotta get that down. You only have a few months to figure it out.
You want to try again? Or are we too far in your head?
Motto Sala.
There you go.
Motto Sala.
Motto Sala. New transfer to K-State Men's Hoops. See, that's why there's an art to smack talk out on the court, field, whatever it is. Because even if someone knows exactly how they want to do something, they know what they're doing, you just plant that thought. You plant a little doubt in their head, and it can really pay dividends there. Not that we're trying to make Mitch fail here, but our conversation about the pronunciation wound up ruining it.
I'd like to think that I know quite a bit about geography, but I had no idea where the Gambia was, and I had to look that up. The Republic of Gambia, extreme Western Africa. Very small country.
Okay, good to know.
What's the capital of Mississippi?
Is it? It's not Oxford, is it?
No.
I don't know.
Is this relevant?
No, I'm just quizzing him.
What's the capital of Mississippi?
This is just a geography quiz?
Yeah.
Well, he lost the spelling bee, so he wants to take me on in geography bee.
We already had a spelling bee this month. We don't need a geography quiz. Geography I'm very bad at, so I've got no interest in trying to do that. Rex Hudler will join us at 5:10. Maybe our softball team can get some advice from Rex Hudler, because things went from bad to worse this week. We were promptly run-ruled in 2.5 innings. That's right. We did not even complete a full three because we were the visitors, and it was 15-0 after 2.5 innings. That came on the heels of an 18-1 loss, but at least that was over the span of, I believe, 6 innings. It was not until late that we got buried, and some of those were like garbage time runs when it really didn't matter, and we had lost all hope. I consider this one to be much, much worse. Much worse. And I'm very frustrated because, listen, we're in the—
You're frustrated.
We're in the E League. This is the A, B, C, D, E League. And it's the lowest league. This team was far too good to be messing around in the E League. Okay? I have never had, and this was not because we were playing too far in, but I can't remember a single game playing left field, which is typically where I play. I cannot remember a single game where more balls have been hit over my head. I've had balls hit further, but consistently having more balls hit over my head, which then led to me having to run a whole bunch, which sucked in and of itself. Chasing down balls in left field, hit after hit, especially early. These guys were way too good. My only thought process here is that they must have skipped their play-in games and they just got plugged into the lowest league. But here was the reason that I could tell that they were way too good, and it wasn't just like, you know, some dumb luck or purely our awful defense, which, by the way, was bad. Certainly a contributing factor. But they were specifically, after their first trip through, they figured out that our poorest outfielders were in right and right center, which is that's typical in softball, because you think of right-handed hitters, everyone's going to pull the ball in slow-pitch softball, so that's typically where you go. They were purposely waiting on the ball and able to hit rockets the opposite way to right field. And when I can tell that you're sitting there waiting on it, to go the opposite field in E-League slow-pitch softball, get all the way out of here, all right? I'm not paying my $20 to get beat 15-0 in 2.5 innings by guys that should not be there, all right? It's one thing if the team is that bad and we're just so horrendously awful we get beat, and I don't care about winning, but I do care about being able to play more than 2.5 innings. That's really the issue here. I have zero interest in really winning or what the score is, but I do want to actually play the game and get more than one at bat.
And nothing against the fielders that we had in right and right center, but it takes them a little bit longer than it does for you to get to the ball if it's hit over their heads.
Well, but like ultimately it doesn't really matter. I mean, most of the time if it's hit over your head, kiss it goodbye. That's just how it works. Like, we're not going to relay throw anybody out at home. And I'm not the fastest guy in the world. I do not have much speed. Remember, I'm a two-time
shooter.
I'm a two-time cut E from baseball and basketball, Blue Valley West High School back in the day. So I do not have much speed. But yeah, you get a hit over your head. That's a virtual inside the park home run every single time in softball. And that happened like 4 times.
What's blown me away is that we've played 4 games so far this season, and none of them have been decided by less than 15 runs.
Yeah.
All 4 of our games.
Yeah, that
come on.
Well, at least the 18-1 game, like I said, I was okay with that because it was competitive for like 5 innings and it went the duration of a normal game. But when we start getting into these 2.5 inning games, because the gap in competition there is just so brutal, it just had me very frustrated. Had me very frustrated because I got one at bat and I absolutely clobbered a ball. Now, it was hit on the ground, but that was probably the hardest hit ball that I've had all year. I feel like I'm really coming into my own at the plate, starting to see the ball better, and I only got one opportunity.
You know what? Forget this. I'm getting that espresso machine that I found on Bed Bath & Beyond earlier.
Yes, there we go. Okay, yes. We'll get the team an espresso machine, start whipping up some Sleggiatos. You're also, can you buy chocolate milk on Amazon or wherever you're at?
Yeah, I'll find some on Amazon.
Get some chocolate milk, start whipping them up in the dugout. That's how we'll do it, just like the Royals. In hour two of the show, we will examine further what's happened when K-State has taken men's basketball transfers from this low a level, like they have with new transfer Mato Sala. When we come back, though, we will get a pep talk from Rex Hudler. We'll ask him about the espresso machine. Is that really the key to the Royals turning it around and getting back in the race? Hour two of the game's coming up next.